On this, the 27th day of September, the year 2021, football season started. That's what I've been doing for the past 2 weeks, looking at football. But I want to talk with you first responders. All right? Thank you for coming to my website. Got a little insight, a little input. How does your day begin? Because every day that your day begins, it's another chapter of your life. And as you live your life, I would admonish, as I always do, to put God first. He is the first person in particular that you should be concerned about, and no one else. But every morning, you decide the type of day that you're going to live. Don't let anyone else decide that for you. You can make it a great one, or you can make it a horrible day, something terrible. It's up to you. No one can make you sad because you're glad all the time. You're happy that you're alive, that you're experiencing life. No one can do that but you. You determine your own emotional state, especially if you keep your mind clear of drugs and foolishness. No one else has to say anything to you because you've got the lot. You've got the power. You have the control in your hands. Take that control. Retain it. Thank you for coming to my website. I've been not off track. I've been enjoying my life. I've been watching football. I've been watching the Rams play in that new Los Angeles stadium. Wow. I'm going to tell you the truth. When they first dug the hole in Inglewood, I used to drive by it on the way to Costco to pick up a few goods. And I said, my goodness, I hope I'm alive to see when they're playing football in there. And here I am alive in 2021, September of the same year, watching them play. I think I'm an intelligent brother, and if you are, you feel the same way. Because when you're intelligent, you exercise your right to live in a powerful way. They milk life for all that it's worth, and that's what you have to do. They make every day a great day, because they remain cognizant of the fact that they are always ready enough to stop the ills that is holding them back and contributing to the plight as a black man or a man in this country. Homicide, AIDS, racism, gender identity crises, and not to discount cancer, just to name a few. There's no rhyme or reason for this consciously inviting additional negatives such as drugs and jealous mates, backstabbing friends and abusive parents and sometimey family members. You know what I mean? Bad debt that you even put yourself into. Now you got to scrape and pull yourself out of it. It's all up to you. It's your life. We have to live with optimism and gratitude. We have to put that pep in our own step, so to say, with optimism. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. You have to walk by faith, radiate with certitude that you are walking by faith. Don't let anyone else tell you and say that you're not walking by faith. You know, the dead apostle, so-called apostle Fred Price, used to use that scripture, we walk by faith and not by sight. But he was talking about a faith that takes and gets. I try to tell young men all around me that everything that I possess in this life, I offer it up praises in the first person. God, first of all, made it possible for me to live and to work and to think and to be guided by, I'm going to say this, and I do hope that it doesn't offend anyone that listens. And I have to apologize first because I live in a world today when you even mention anything about spirituality, that there has to be something wrong with you. No, there isn't. But know who you are. And I want you to take the bull by the horns and live the life for yourself. That's what it's all about. We, all of us, have to be very mindful that there are better things to come. Even when on the horizon, everything looks bleak. Optimism and upbeat people gives us a conscious decision-making tone. And the naysayers will have to keep the evil spirits at bay because we are thinking positive. We are the first responders in our life. You don't need anyone else to respond to you. You know, some people ask me, they say, well, John, I understand that as a professing Christian years ago, you don't attend church anymore. No, I don't have to. Church is within me. God is within me. There's a scripture that I recall when I was a young man. Christ in you, the hope of glory. I have Christ in me, not crises. You see, sometimes I talk to people and the word goes out, well, you sound like a person that welcomes crises. No, I welcome fate that if you live a horrible life and do horrible things, that horrible things are going to come back at you. But I believe that God gives us the insight to find out what makes us tick. Ah, my friend, you don't want people to hit you with sticks or put salt in your wounds, and certainly not with garlic. Rather, true men possess good thoughts, connect with good vibes, stay prayerful, surrounding ourselves with good people, aspiring to good things. I have a new set of friends, not the church friends that I used to have, because a new set of friends, and very many of them, have learned how to live in that lane that brings them, not prosperity necessarily, not a lot of money, but a hell of a lot of happiness, contentment. I called my sister in Chicago the other day, and we were talking about a few things, and I asked her about R. Kelly, the man that grew up in her part of the country where she is, and she and her son just terribly spoke about the man, and he's going to get what he deserves, and he did this, and he did that. And, you know, I thought about it when I hung up the phone from speaking with my sister. I said, all of us got track records that are pretty foul. I have friends that used to, that I used to go to church with, worship God with, and they lived lives that were far more horrible than R. Kelly. They told me about it. They told me all the stories of the people. I've spoken with men in my life that have had sex with other people other than their wives and people that they were committed to in the church and just out of hand, bragged about it. Now I listen to nobody. I don't want to hear their stories. I tell them, if you are at one with God and if you can do anything that messes up your life and makes you become a person that cannot be trusted to live for God, that's up to you. So I would add and say that certainly all of us in our lifetime will experience times of hardships and doubts. I've experienced a lot of that during COVID and I'm sure that you have too. But we'll be able to face wave after wave of discouragement, disillusionment, and displeasure because we are first responders in our own lives. Regardless of how much money you have, regardless of whether you're homeless or hapless or whatever, this is a part of life. And life is not always fair, but if you look at it in its true perspective, it is fair. You get what you deserve, and God sees to that. Now, what we have to do is we have to learn how to coincide with what God is saying. Genuine positive people are realistic. Are you? They have a view of the world, not through rose-colored glasses, but with 20/20 vision. And they exercise that vision as they look at their lives. They realize that the earth and its people are indeed flawed, but they choose to accentuate the good things, providing them with a spectacular benefits, better health, more energy, creativity, better problem-solving abilities, the facility to hang in there. I love that. Hang in there-ism is where we ought to be in our lives. And an overall sense of happiness instead of dread. As black men, I'm going to tell you what we need to do. We have to collectively accentuate the positive and eliminate the negatives from our lives. Now, many of you may say, this is very hard to do, PJ, but it's not. You know, it's how you get up in the morning. You know what I did today? I got up, I had to do some painting. You know, some of the paint is chipped off the walls in some of the rooms. And I found some of the paint. I have to go to Home Depot and get a couple of fresh paint brushes. And I'm going to enliven my bathroom and kitchen and other sections of the house and take care of the chipped paint that's come off through all the years that I've had young men come to my house and visit me. I'm accentuating the positive. You see what I'm doing? Heaven knows, as people of color, we have no use for Mr. In Between. Remember, you are a part of the blessed, proud, and strong race of black men and women comprised of loving, caring, and resilient black people. We are capable of choosing the roads we travel on the journey of our lives. Therefore, we must choose those roads wisely and make them work for us. And that takes diligent process of thinking about where you are. The aptness to maintain a positive mental attitude is a self-imposed skill, and we all should be empowered to possess that skill, and then we have to adapt to it. Resolve today to let yesterday's negatives go. I love doing that, and that's what I do every week. I let all the negatives go, even if somebody tries to screw over me and take advantage of me. I was telling a young man, I said, you know what, man, what do you need? And he kind of bowed his head. I said, tell me what you need. And he told me what he needed. And I said, I'll have that for you tomorrow. I'll have that for you tomorrow. And I called him and said, what you needed, I have here. Come and get it. He hasn't come to get it yet. You know what? He didn't need it. Because if he really needed it, see, he has to accentuate the positive. And I said, put forth an effort. I put forth an effort to bless you. Now you put forth an effort to come and get it. See what I mean? Many of us live in a world where we say, you help. You know what my daughters tell me sometimes? They say, Daddy, you help people that should not be helped. You give of yourself in a way that you should never do it. Well, damn it, let me tell you something. That's what my faith taught me. See, from the year 1967 up until the present, I profess to be a believer in Jesus Christ, the righteous prophet. But I'm going to tell you, if you do not accentuate the positive, you cannot say that you are a part of that group. So I want all of us today to resolve today to let yesterday's negatives go and march on towards becoming the most positive and enthusiastic about life person that you know. Remember, you are the first responders. You aren't waiting on anyone else to do it. You're going to do it. Then spread that around. Make it a contagious thing to do. I see that that's relatively easy. But a lot of my brothers would say, man, you know, the white man made me bitter and angry. No, if you're a white man listening to this, I want to talk with you too. You know who that is? Listen to this. George Gershwin directing the Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra. Not George Gershwin, but Leonard Bernstein. Yes. An American in Paris. You've heard that before. No, but that was Rhapsody in Blue. The Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra directed by the late Leonard Bernstein on the piano. And the conductor of that piece. That number was about 17 minutes and 8 seconds long. One of my favorite numbers. And, I'm going to tell you what I like. I'm going to play this next number. It is called the Cuban Overture. And let me start off with that. And then as you listen to a few moments of this, I'm going to share something with you about don't be an angry black man. I've met so many angry black men. Anger because they got with the wrong woman. They should never married her. They should. You know what I tell black men now? Now, if you want to get married and start a family and have a legacy and build wealth and leave your house and all your fortune and your money and everything to your children and to your wife and to your family, well, go right ahead on and do that. Because that is an honorable thing that you're doing. But I don't want you to complain that you don't have any money when it's all gone. So we're going to listen to a little bit right now. Am I getting on your case? No, I'm trying not to. I'm just keeping it real. I am my first responder. This number is called the Cuban Overture, and this is played by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, directed by James Levine. Enjoy them playing Gershwin. There's nothing like Gershwin. I love Gershwin, and it didn't just start with me loving Gershwin. My mother did. She had these 78 records, these large 78 playing records, and she would play Gershwin. I grew up with Gershwin, and so I'm used to that. All right, so don't be an angry black man. Then one has said that I have had and have my own pain, from racism to poverty, brokenness, and it's a struggle of day-to-day living. Pain can make us bitter or better. I want it to be made. I want it to be made better. That's what T.D. Jakes wrote. And T.D. Jakes has never been a favorite one of my persons because he claimed to be a theologue. I claim to be a theologue, but we grew up in different camps, different schools, so to say. I was in more of a conservative mode, and he was liberal. Many times when I was on the radio, when I was a far younger man, I would challenge Touchdown Jakes with his doctrinal perspectives. I would challenge Fred Price, the late Fred Price. I would challenge Ken Omer, all those other guys. Now, you know, I'm living my best life right now. I'm living it. I don't necessarily care what those men believe. I think I've wasted a lot of my adult life trying to justify something that another person would never want it to be justified in. It's like, you know, this webcast, and I felt so good today, and I said, before I leave my house, I haven't even combed my hair. I'm sitting here in the studio with my hair all napped up on my head, listening to good music, talking to my very dear friends, white, black, Hispanic, Asian alike. I love everybody, but I don't think nor live like everybody. I choose the kind of people that bring happiness, and listen, I'm trying to help you. You choose the kind of people that bring happiness and joy to your heart and run with them. Don't worry about the ones that don't want to run with you, to be with you, to talk with you, to embrace what you embrace. Don't worry about those. I'm looking forward to spending a little time with a friend of mine from up in the northern countries of Canada. He knows who he is. I just want to spend some time with him, to talk with him, to let him walk me through his transitions of watching his family grow up. Not necessarily discussing some great biblical treaties, because it's good to do that. I still have my main commentaries in my home, and my office is full of books about the Bible and the history of it and everything else. And I love at times going through it, especially when I see these younger people trying to formulate a kind of an opinion about how their world works without putting forth much effort. Now, I've been blessed because I've met a couple of young men that have placed themselves deeply into the context of the scriptures, and they are doing fairly well. But people of color have been through a lot in America. I was just watching a movie on Netflix last night about slavery, and it was an excellent film. And it was a film to bring black people to a conscious state of mind. And yes, I think it is very important for us to look out for ourselves, because I believe that back in the day, our ancestors had seers, had wise older men that would speak to the younger men and the younger women, regardless of what tribe they were in, and telling them how to live their best life as first responders. Discrimination, racism, unemployment, miseducation, and violence have been constants in many African-American lives, yet we've endured that too. This is particularly true for the black man who continues to feel the brunt of many societal ills. You know, the way a policeman looks at you when he gets out of the car, when there's a group of our young men standing on the corner. When I see a group of black men standing on the corner, I see nothing but power. I see nothing but positive. I see nothing but advancement of a culture. That's why I have my flag blowing outside of the Lucy Coleman studio now. I am unapologetically black. Proud of that. Yes, some brothers are bitter. Can you blame them? Well, in reality, we don't have time to be bitter. Not now. And you know what? It's too late to build up our army and our defense against a system that was perpetrated to bring us to ultimate disaster and failure. But for some men, anger has become a way of life. And these men know no other way. However, a man that rises at dawn with anger and rage and resentment aimed at, quote unquote, the man or the system, he cheats himself. He does not experience the completely settled mind, inner peace, and contentment with his place in the world. I know that to be true. I know that to be true. I know some angry men. I was telling some young men a couple of days ago. He thought that I was trying to cheat him. And I said, I've never cheated a brother and I will never cheat a brother. But I told him, I know a brother will cheat me because they're angry and they're bitter. And in communicating that, I let them know that my nature is not one to pull another brother down. I do not believe in the crawdad mentality of life. I listen to all of the good morning talk shows and everything from young black men, and they got the whiskey right on the table there to keep their minds illuminated, I guess, and so they can justify who they say they are. No, we will never forget the hundreds of years of blood, sweat and tears that was shed as we were traded off and sold or studded out and bred like animals. It's unrealistic to even think that we would ever forget that. I don't want us to forget it. I recall in church, I remember the church men, the white pastors of these big churches, we need to look beyond that and forget what happened in the past. No, we don't. We need to get in touch with our ancestors through the spirituality that came with us, that was bred in us, that is in our DNA. That's what we need to do. And we need to stop living someone else's contorted view of what makes this world turn for them. Although our civil rights efforts during the 50s and the 60s brought about a few changes, gave us the right to vote, and later affirmative action program came in, but we see that there are more people that are not black using affirmative action even against us right now. And many of those gains are now being challenged, have been challenged, and are no longer legitimate. And we continue to follow closely the suspicious clerks. We are followed by these clerks in department stores, pulled over, driving while black, and just denied country club memberships, even after Tiger Woods won the Masters tournament. Still didn't want us hanging around like that. Being black in this country is difficult. I'm not going to lie to you. And for some of you that are my white friends, I'm not a black nationalist. I'm beyond a black nationalist. I'm a black person that is proud of his DNA, proud of his heritage. And I'm proud to have white friends, Anglo friends that I can truly say that I love. And some of them sympathize with the plight of black men. Yes, the system still needs work. The man still needs enlightening. And I think that the millennials of this new age are doing a pretty good way to strategize that particular enlightenment. However, deep-rooted anger must not be what guides our psyche or our lives. If we let this deep-seated anger, ambiguity, hatred towards other people, it will self-destruct within us as individuals, and it will self-destruct our community. We can see much of that happening in Chi-Town. Brothers killing brothers. Oh, yes, I've heard the reports of their white men in blackface killing these young brothers. No, not the news that I read today. So, we cannot do that. As survivors and first responders, we have to turn away from the pointless hatred towards a positive construction of action. Now, I don't know exactly what that positive construct of action might be for you, but I know exactly what it might be for me. It means sitting in this Lucy Coleman studio on an overcast day in Los Angeles. Right now, what's the time? 1:45 in the p.m. Instead of me painting and going to get this paint and these brushes to take care of fixing up my house on the inside, I'm thinking about you. Not until there's a shift in social consciousness will we see this complete erasure of racism and discrimination. So don't look for it to end. It's going to continue to bubble in your face. Okay, the haul may be a long one, and I believe that it is going to be a long one, and the cross to bear may be heavy, and it is a heavy one, and it is costing us every day of our lives. However, with clear minds and a desire to enlighten and to warm another person's heart and to give a positive attitude, our journey will be shorter and lighter. See, and so we need to cut out this anger response. Get mad. Then try to change the system. Get mad. But then get over it. Life is too short to waste your time and energy on its negative aspects. I had an in-law cousin call me yesterday, a couple of days ago, and said, I'm sick of it and I'm going to get back at her. I said, now what did she do? And he told me what he was going to do because of what she will not do for him. And I thought about it and I said, this person is in my family and this hatred is still reigning and ruling in my family, in my bloodline. That's why I never took my daughters and my wife around my family members when I was a young man, because I did not want them to be poisoned by that attitude. When you think that you hit rock bottom, remember, there's nowhere to go but up. And I like that idea. If I hit the rock bottom, well, surely I just climb on up to the top of the thing. Use your wallet. I did that to help a young man. What do you need? I said, how much do you need? Don't tell me what it is you need it for, because number one, that's none of my business. Okay? If I've been put in a position to help you, and if I say that I, and this wasn't an exchange for any kind of a gratification coming my way, because I'm not that kind of a man. If I want gratification, I get my gratification. And I call gratification what it is, gratification. I was just having a conversation. And the young man was sounding like he was down and out because he did. That's what the oasis of my life is all about. It is the way I view my life. I'm 77 years old, or am I 78? I almost forgot. But I'm at an age where I do not allow negativity to stop me being positive. So I'm going to use my wallet, my expertise, or my determination, no violence, as a means to effect change. And I think that that's very important. 35 minutes and 30 seconds into the webcast, you're listening to PJ, better known as Pastor John, retired evangelical Protestant pastor, retired from going to church. You know, we didn't stayed home over a year, right? And a lot of people say, well, the church has suffered. No, if I walked into a church, I wouldn't even recognize what I'm looking at. I leave my YouTube clips up. I hope they're still up. I haven't been to my YouTube page in so long. I leave them up because there are some people out there that like that old kind of teaching to keep them in line. Well, I still believe in God. But I'll tell you this. Each of us have to have the courage to cry when we are sad. That's very, very important. This is the good note from MC Hammer, the entertainer. Get it right, John, for black men. He said, we have been raised to never shed a tear, no matter how it hurts. That's right. That's how black men were raised. We can be better men if we understand that it's all right at certain moments in our life to shed a tear. Hammer was right. Some of you church members, Hammer's a sinner. He didn't know God. You can't touch this. No, wait a minute. That was his thing, his time to live. You do your thing. And stop being so negative about another black man. And I believe, as other people do, that far too many black men are walking around in emotional pain, suffering in silence. At some point in our history, we fellas are conditioned to hide our emotions. In other words, particularly emotions that may result in tears and sadness. We don't want to do that. That's why we want to be mean and fight and knock out the brother. What do you mean? I remember recently I was talking with a young man, and he thought that I had treated him wrong. And I looked at him and I said, look at me in my face. I said, I've never treated a black man like that. You don't have to be fearful around me. I'm not that kind of man. Don't you want to become that kind of a person? If you're a first responder, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to calm the brother down. I'm telling you, nah, man, I'm all right, I'm cool. Those are the words that we often hear out of the mouths of people that have built up these emotional blockades, buildings especially, up around other men. But brother man, we don't have to be afraid if others hear our cry. We don't have to build up barriers to protect us from reality. Unfortunately, society deems happiness and anger as somewhat acceptable emotions for a brother to show. Brother's not supposed to be happy, 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 clap. Now, I see a lot of that now in these youngsters, in these millennials. When they get happy, they get to clapping and crying, and it's all in our youngsters' lives. And we even find ourselves trying to tell our youngsters, oh, no, don't show that. Don't show that kind of response, because it makes you look weak. He said, crying is not a sign of weakness, my friend. It is a part of being human. I mean, when you see something that saddens you and makes you cry, go ahead. Let it all hang out. It's a part of being human. I like that. Think back at the time when you saw another man cry. Perhaps it was your daddy. Or your granddaddy. Now let me think. Have I ever seen my grandfather's cry? Yes. I've seen my grandfather on my mother's side cry, but the grandfather on my father's side, he never cried. He was a stern man. How about my daddy? No. How about a friend of mine? Oh, I've seen a lot of friends of mine cry. Or maybe my boss? No. Was it at a funeral of a loved one? No, men don't cry. They get them walk out first. They don't want their family and friends to see them shedding a tear. Or maybe it was during a joyous occasion, such as a graduation, a confirmation, something like that, or during the birth of a child. I cried during the birth of both of my grandchildren because I got happy. Because I know that my DNA would go on years after I'm dead, unless a big meteorite comes down and hits the planet and obliterates all of us in a puff. I cried. Sometimes seeing another man cry makes you feel helpless, not knowing what how to comfort him. Now, I saw a lot of that during 9/11 because I was alive when the buildings were blown up. You notice I didn't say when the planes hit the buildings. Now, I'm not going to say that a plane didn't hit the building. They were blown up. Now, we can have that conversation later, and you can try to tell me what I don't know. I do know what I saw. I cried when I saw people jumping off the top of them towers, holding hands. I cried when I heard the messages that the sisters was up there saying, come on, Jesus is Lord, because our feet is getting hot, because these flames are burning, and we can't exist, and they can't come up here and get us. It's done. Let's fly away to meet Jesus. Oh, yes, I wept. Yes, I did. Surely you don't condemn people for crying like that, do you? Rather, a warm, brotherly embrace may be just what he needs to let him know that you care. We ought to think that way about our brothers and sisters. We have become a selfish brood of vipers. Be strong, be strong. They showed it last night. I watched the Cowboys whip the Philadelphia Eagles on Monday Night Football here. They played in that beautiful stadium in Texas that the Cowboys built. But I'm telling you, I like the one in Los Angeles. Man, you can go and have a steak dinner and watch the team play on the 50-yard line. Ain't that great? I'll probably never in my life. No, I could afford it. I could buy a ticket and do that. I'd probably have to spend about $1,500, $1,600 for a Sunday afternoon to watch a game live and to eat some vegan steak and watch my Rams or my L.A. Chargers play. But I'm not going to cry over the team if they lose. No, no. While we work to become more comfortable with expressing our own emotions, we also need to tell our sons, our nephews, and the younger boys, these millennials that we mentor, that big boys do cry, and that there's going to be things that are going to make us cry, and that doesn't make you weak if you cry. I recall when Kobe Bryant died on that hillside. I watched the Laker teams and the other basketball players shed tears at the memorial service for the loss of he and his daughter and their dear friends' lives in that tragic helicopter incident. It wasn't an accident. It was an incident because all of us are going to leave here. None of us have come to this planet in order to stay here. And so I think that if we get that through our minds, very clear that when things happen to us, crying becomes natural. It's a natural happenstance. Cry with your neighbors. Cry with the people you work with. Cry with the man at the bus stop. Cry with the lady that got evicted. Cry with the person that went into the hospital and their daddy never got out because of COVID. Cry for them. The Bible accounts how Jesus wept during his most trying moments as a man on earth. It said Jesus wept. Think about it. And you know why Jesus wept? And I know what that was all about. It was when he went down there to see his old friend Lazarus and his sisters, and Lazarus has died, and they had buried him, and Jesus told him to remove the stone, and the people of Jericho, I believe it was, said, oh, he stinketh by now. And the next verse, the writer wrote, Jesus wept. Now, you know, the controversy, I recall when I went to Talbot Theological Seminary, I was sitting in the classroom, and I was one of the older people that, because I went to grad school later in life, I was in my late 40s, early 50s when I went to grad school, and some of the young boys asked the professor, well, why do you think Jesus was crying? And I raised my hand and I began to speak. I said, he was crying because those fools didn't believe who he was. See, that's why he was crying. Isn't that something? Jesus, a strong spiritual man, he cried because they didn't know what they were looking at. I've shed a lot of tears over black men that didn't know what they were looking at. Some of them lost their lives. Some of them are in jail. Some of them made the wrong decision. Some of them are still making decisions. And they won't cry and tell on themselves because they're not first responders to themselves. Ah, Jesus had a long-standing reputation for being the strongest brothers with whom we are familiar. So as strong brothers, and I want to encourage you to do this, we have to be in touch with our spectrum of feelings here, from joy to sadness, from fear to anger. The shedding of tears can be an experience of ultimate release, and this is what we must learn how to do. It enables the mightiest man to feel renewed. I love crying, shedding tears. Sometimes, you know what? I was watching two movies today. I watched a, I think it was a Korean or a Chinese subtitle film. It was a beautiful film. And then I watched the film Jaws, the first one. I never got a chance to watch every scene, to listen to every line. And when I looked at it, there was a portion of the movie in the first Jaws one when they were on the ship, when the police chief and the captain of this little tugboat and this smart yuppie kind of college guy were going to defeat this big shark. And the best part of the film was when the three men began to share their experience of injuries that they got from dealing with sharks. And that's where they bonded. That was, I think, to me, the greatest part of the movie, because those men began to bond. They begin to respect each other over and beyond, especially the scene when the guy was talking about his on being on the ship Indianapolis in World War II when it went down in the Pacific Ocean and sharks began to eat up the sailors. I remember that historically. I've seen pictures of it on the internet, real films about it, and they kind of wrote that in the script, and it made it personal. This guy wasn't crazy. This guy was truly a man that knew how to catch a big fish. And I cried as I watched it because I watched men bond together. I love that. I love to see men bond because they will fight a cause. That's why I love being drafted in the Army. I love being in the military. I have military caps. I let people know who I am because of who I am. Yes, this crying enables the mightiest man to be renewed. Whether it is to let go of guilt, cleanse your heavy heart, or to forgive yourself, or to finally begin to heal. Never tell a child, especially a younger brother, big boys don't cry. We do, and it's okay. Don't be afraid to show your emotions in front of your mate, your children, or any of your friends. No one will condemn you for doing it. When your heart is heavy, the person may be just that pillar of strength you need to lean on. And lastly, know that you don't have to hold on to your pain. I love this. I thank you for listening to me. I was reading from a great book that I have in my library, What Black Men Should Do Now. It's 100 Simple Truths, Ideas, and Concepts by K. Thomas Oglesby, with the foreword by Tavis Smiley. Whatever happened to Tavis Smiley? Tavis Smiley had an urge, and the system came against that urge, and he suffered the consequences of that.